Hi there and welcome. This is Amanda, the founder of Astrology Hub, and you're listening to our Week Ahead Snapshot with world-class astrologer, historian, and author of The Cosmic Calendar, Christopher Renstrom. This show is designed to give you a quick overview of the week ahead, enabling you the gift of choice in how you navigate and weave these energies into your daily life. Enjoy.
This podcast episode is sponsored by Astrology Hubs Academy. Wherever you are on your astrology journey, we have a class that will help you get to the next level.
Hello, my name is Christopher Renstrom, and I'm your weekly horoscope columnist here on Astrology Hub. And this week, I wanted to talk to you about the upcoming Sun-Uranus square on February 3rd, followed by the Venus-Mars square on February 4th, and then concluded by the full moon in Leo, which triggers the Sun-Uranus square, and that full moon in Leo takes place on February 5th. This is clearly not a week for issuing ultimatums, not unless you want the other party to take you up on them. Let me explain how this works. When we're dealing with a square that's taking place in such close proximity, like for instance, the Sun-Uranus square that's taking place on February 3rd, a square naturally is about a conflict. It's about two conflicting parties. It's about two conflicting points of view, two conflicting personalities. It will always bring about some sort of like fight or conflict. But the fight or conflict is in order to gain the upper hand. It's in order to get your way. That's pretty much what a pure square will be about. When you have a second square following on the heels of the first square, well, that's kind of like adding gasoline to the fire, okay? It makes it even more incendiary. And then when you have a third square taking place, and in this case, we're talking about the full moon in Leo on February 5th, which then creates a fixed T square, well, that's about as explosive as you can get. But let me break down what all of that means, because oftentimes that just sounds like a lot of mumbo jumbo and things like that. And as an astrologer, it's my job to break that down and to offer an interpretation for you. So let's begin with the idea of Uranus. Uranus is a modern planet. That means that Uranus was one of the three planets added to the pantheon of planets in astrology in the modern period. Uranus was actually the first modern planet. It was discovered in 1781, roughly at the midpoint between the American War for Independence and the French Revolution. This was the Enlightenment really at its peak. The reason why we say this is the Age of Enlightenment at its peak is that what was being put forward during this period of time were the two great social experiments, which were going to address the question of whether a society could exist without a monarch or without a king. You had one example taking place in America where there was a war for independence, where the colonists basically threw off the shackles of the British Empire and became their own nation. And then you had the other example, which was taking place in France, where the people were rising up against the king, against the old regime, and saying that we're taking back our lives, we're taking back our property, we're taking back the way that society is going to be run. So we're overthrowing the king. So in one situation, which was America, it was colonists fighting off an occupying army, which is very different from trying to stage a revolution on your own native soil. And that was the case with France. So here Uranus is discovered in 1781, basically at the midpoint between these two very different revolutions, which had two very different outcomes. Now, Uranus is the planet of revolution and change in astrology. That's pretty much how we refer to it. People might say it's erratic, it's volatile, it's eccentric, it doesn't fit in, you know, it's rebellious, it has to throw off the chains of oppression, and all of these things are pretty much true. But I like to work with simple words to help sort of keep me on track when I'm doing an astrological chart reading. So for me, Uranus is the planet of revolution and change. But that's a very interesting idea in and of itself. This little passage that I'm going to share with you comes from Merriam-Webster Dictionary. The word revolution and the word revolt have a shared origin, both ultimately going back to the Latin word revolvere, which means to revolve or roll back. When revolution first appeared in the English language in the 14th century, it referred to the movement of a celestial body in orbit. Okay, so in other words, its original connotation was astronomical. It talked about the moon orbiting the Earth, or it talked about Mars orbiting the sun, or the Earth orbiting the sun. So when they referred to a celestial body completing one movement, one orbit around the sun, or the moon completing one orbit around the Earth, okay, that was a revolution. So it was this set course of an orbit where you wound up where you began, and when you completed that orbit, you completed one revolution around the sun. So what's kind of fascinating about this is that on one hand, revolution means this completion of an orbit. It's a fixed orbit. There's nothing unpredictable about it. There's nothing volatile about it. The planet will take however long that planet takes to orbit the sun. Okay, so it meant the completion of a course. But it also suggested the idea of progression, because if you've completed one orbit, then you're going to start and complete another, which is the second orbit, a third, a fourth. So you're progressing, you're counting. Okay, so it's this idea of the completion of an orbit and of counting, of progressing, of moving into the future, okay, was this idea of revolution that was introduced in the 14th century. But what I didn't know and thought was rather fascinating that Merriam-Webster helped out and pointed this out was at the same time in English in the 14th century, the word developed a sharply different meaning, namely a sudden, radical, or complete change. So the appearance of revolution in the English language comes with two very different meanings. One is the completion of an orbit along a predictable course of movement, and the other one is a sudden, radical, or complete change, apparently from the idea of a reversal of direction implicit in the Latin verb. Revolt, which initially meant to renounce allegiance, grew from the same idea of rolling back, in this case, from a prior bond of loyalty. So to begin with, revolt had this sort of like renouncing of an allegiance. I'm not an ally of yours anymore. I'm not going to obey. I'm not going to do what you think. But it also came from this idea of revolve, roll back. And so it was this idea of rolling back time, you know, like not only going to denounce allegiance to you, but I'm going to restore it. I'm going to restore it back to me. And so this is basically the origin of the word revolution in the English language. Now, what does that have to do with Uranus? Well, Uranus is a very complex planet. It's the first of the modern planets, as I just described to you. But Uranus is also, curiously, the only planet that orbits our sun that revolves on an axis, like we all revolve on an axis, but its axis is sideways, okay? So we have a north and south pole, and we think of it as like north is up north and south pole is down south, okay? So when we think of our axis that we rotate on, it's north and south, it's up and down. Well, Uranus's axis is where our equator would be, okay? Like, how wild is that? Okay, so it's basically where our equator would be. So Uranus is orbiting the sun in the sky, turning on its side. So you can almost think of Uranus as a wheel. I'd like to refer to it as the wheel in the sky. It keeps on turning. But Uranus is a wheel. It turns on its side. And why? You would expect the axle, you know, the wheel turns on an axle, and so it's on its side as it orbits the sun. It's the only planet in our solar system to do that. And incidentally, by the way, Uranus also has rings around it, just like Saturn does. Okay, so it's this marvelous kind of eccentric, you know, maverick. One of these things is not like the other planets in astrology. Not only is it like that physically, but it's also like that in terms of astrology. So Uranus, this idea of this wheel, is a very important image to keep in mind. One of the things that it's going to remind one of is the Wheel of Fortune. The Wheel of Fortune was a very powerful image, particularly in the medieval period in Europe, because what you had was the sort of set will of God who resided outside of our world in the realm of eternity. God, sort of as the prime mover, set things in motion and then retired to eternity, where he wasn't really all that involved in our evolution of society, at least not after the biblical age. Okay. And so what we experienced in life was Wheel of Fortune, basically the caprice of fortune. And the Wheel of Fortune was always pictured as a wheel, okay? And at the top of the wheel was a person, usually a crowned figure, you know, basically symbolizing, I'm on top of the world, okay? So this person was on top of the wheel. But then over here, heading down on the wheel, was someone who was like, you know, like they're clinging to the wheel as they're like heading down and they're like screaming. It's like a roller coaster. It's like, you know, it's like you reach the top of a roller coaster and then it goes down and you're like, okay, so that's like what was going on, all right? And then at the bottom of the wheel was another figure that was kind of like oppressed or desolate, or looked like they had stepped out of a tavern drunk and were like spilled on the street. So it was like, you know, this under the wheel figure, you know, and we still have this, I feel like I'm under the wheel, like I'm being crushed or crunched, you know, crushed or crunched. And so there was that figure. But then there was another figure, which was on the other corner or quarter of the wheel, which was clinging to the wheel and looking up with this kind of like, you know, yay, you know, because my time is coming. I'm rising out of the nadir, out of the depths, out of the lowest point, and I'm rising up and I'm going to get to the top. Okay. So basically, you know, oftentimes people will read it as a cycle, you know, what's on top one day will be on the bottom the next and that sort of thing. And it can be read that way, but I like to sort of read each of the stations independently. You know, there's going to be a time of month or year or a time of your life in which you feel on top of the world. You know, there are going to be times in which you feel like you're heading down, you know, like you've fallen. You lost what you had, and you're going to hit bottom. You know, you're bottoming out. There's going to be a time when you're on the bottom, when you're at the nadir, at the bottom of the wheel, and you feel like there are no choices and there is no hope, you know. But then, of course, the wheel turns. Everything turns. We live in a time in which things orbit and wheels turn. And so even if you're at the bottom, there's always going to be a sort of, you know, getting up out of the dust, getting up out of the ground, recovering from a night of revels the following morning when barkeep throws the bucket of water on you and you're like, and barkeep's like, get up and go home. And you're like, ugh. You know, I mean, you still get up out of the street and you sort of like, you know, lumber on home. Okay, so there's a getting up again, which is implied in life. And then there's rising up. There's the idea of arriving, rising up and heading up towards that peak. You know, so you look at it with great expectation and longing and maybe even ambition and aspiration. So this is basically this idea of this wheel of fortune. No one always stays fortunate, no more than anyone always stays unfortunate. Okay, that there is this wheel that is turning. And Uranus represents that idea. Okay, Uranus represents that idea in terms of revolution, that there's a set course that a planet will complete an orbit, that you may go through a period that's very difficult, but you'll come through it and once again be on the rise again. Okay, so Uranus is going to talk about that. But Uranus is also going to talk about radical departure, you know, disavowing allegiance, overthrowing what's in power, overthrowing the established order and the exhilaration that might come with doing just that. And this is exactly what Uranus did when it was discovered in 1781. When Uranus was discovered in 1781 by accident, okay? And one of the reasons why accidents are always associated with the planet Uranus. Okay, Uranus was discovered in March 1781 by accident. And when it was discovered, what it did is that it overthrew the planetary order. You have to remember, since Mesopotamia, there were always seven planets, okay? That was the fixed order. Okay, maybe it got switched around with Copernicus and the moon wasn't a planet, the sun wasn't a planet. But for astrologers, there were always seven planets. Planet comes from the Greek word planetos, which means wandering light. The orbs of light in the sky that move versus the orbs of light that don't, like the stars, which make up constellations. Planets move in front of constellations which don't move. Okay, so Uranus overthrew that order. Just like Uranus overthrew the order of the seven traditional ancient planets, just like Uranus overthrew the order that you had to have a monarch or a king or a set society. And, you know, here was enlightenment. We're taking back our rights. This is the age of enlightenment at its flower. It's the scientific age, which is why Uranus has always been associated to science and modern technology. Enlightenment comes from the idea of electricity. Electricity is being discovered and experimented on this time. We're moving from fires to electric light, and this is happening under the auspices of Uranus. So getting back to this square, which really becomes exacerbated by the fact that it's part of a T-square on these days in February, February 3rd, 4th, and 5th, what can we expect? Well, basically, the three things that one expects from any sort of Uranian square. A breakthrough, a breakdown, or a comeback. Okay, breakthrough is break on through to the other side. You know, we've done it. We've overthrown the order. We've thrown off our chains of oppression. We're free. That's a breakthrough. A breakdown is I can't take it anymore. You know, the wheels collapse underneath the cart and it just collapses into the street. It's become too old, too broken. Can't carry the weight or the pressure anymore, so you have a breakdown. A comeback? Remember, you can have the wheel, what's up is down, and what's down comes back up again, but also move that wheel to the side so that it's almost like a orbiting planet, and you have what's come around once comes around again. Okay, so this is why Uranus, even more than Mercury retrogrades, can be associated to a comeback, all right? It's a restoration of what had come before. So let me walk you through how this T-square is going to work, okay? A T-square, basically, to understand in astrology, is two squares, okay? It's actually going to be two planets that are opposite one another, and they're each squaring a midpoint, all right? So here's my weird choreography. You have a planet here, you have a planet here, and they're both squaring this one planet in the middle. So I am planet one, and I'm opposing you, planet two, and we are both squaring planet three, okay? So that is a T-square. And with T-squares, it's always a time of stress and conflict and things like that. But I think we can get a little bit more information out to you than just that. All right, so this sticks T-square. Who are the characters in the play? This is what I always ask, you know, when I'm looking at an astrological chart, who are the characters in this play? Okay, we have the sun. Okay, and this is the sun is the planet of self and what I know about myself to be true. Okay, and we say, come out, sun. And sun is like, here I am. Do you like what you see? Of course you like what you see. I'm the sun. I radiate. And you say, okay, sun, you're cast in the role of Aquarius because that's the zodiac sign you're in. And you're like, good, I'll go and stand over here and read for the part of Aquarius. Okay, so the sun goes over to Aquarius. And then you ask for the next one. You say, oh, this is a full moon. Full moon means that the moon is opposite the sun. And so you're like, moon, moon. And moon is like, here, I was just finishing eating something, but I'm here. You know, you say, okay, moon, come forward. Yes. You're cast in the role in the sign of Leo. So we want you to come over here and play Leo. I love to play Leo. okay, let's come on over here. I'll sit down and be Leo. Okay, I'll read for Leo. Okay, and then you say Uranus, you know, which like, you know, enters, you know, through the wall or crashing through the ceiling or something along those lines, somehow maybe even overturning the casting call table. Okay, Uranus, you're reading for the role of Taurus and you go over there and it's like on it. Okay, so Uranus goes on over there. So we have the sun in Aquarius. We have, let's put it up on a wheel. We have the sun in Aquarius, the moon in Leo, and Uranus in Taurus. Okay. Actually, it should go Uranus in Taurus, sun in Aquarius, moon in Leo. Now, why did I do that? Everyone's like, why did you do that? It was making sense before. Why did you do that? I did that because when we set up a wheel, we always want to set it up in astrological order. If we're going to pick the middle planet that's in a T-square, the planet that both planets are squaring, all right? Okay, that planet's going to be Uranus, and Uranus is in Taurus, and I think it's just easier visually to put Uranus in Taurus at the top of the chart. It's at the top of the wheel. It's kind of like the deciding planet here in the equation. What do we know about Uranus and Taurus? That it's revolutionary, it's revolution and change, you know? So we get the idea of it being introducing something catalytic and radical and different, okay? And it's doing this in the zodiac sign of Taurus. And Taurus is an earth sign, so we know that health and wealth is really important to Taurus, okay? And the way that things are done in a consistent and stable manner are going to be very important to Taurus. You throw Uranus in there, the planet of revolution and change. Uranus always knocks the game board over and sends all the pieces flying, okay? This is what Taurians have been experiencing in their life since 2018. Not all the time, but this is generally what they've been experiencing, which is an upset in the way that things are supposed to be stable or the way that things are supposed to be constant. So if you think of health and wealth, there may be an issue that's going on in your life that pertains to health and wealth or your finances or your work or your industry or your property that's being afflicted right now. Okay, and this is going to apply chiefly to people born under the zodiac signs of Taurus, Leo, Scorpio, and Aquarius, and even more specifically, people who have their suns, moons, or ascendants at around 15 degrees. Okay, so if you have your sun or moon or ascendant at 15 Taurus or 15 Leo or 15 Scorpio or 15 Aquarius, I'm talking to you. Okay, so this is what it's going to be impacting. And so this is already, remember that a modern planet like Uranus or Neptune or Pluto, those are the two other modern planets, are very slow moving. They can have a very powerful impact when they're triggered, okay? But for the most part, they're slow moving and kind of like in the background. That's why we pay attention to them whenever there is a planetary aspect that is triggering them. It's basically sounding off the alarm and the sleeping dog that was like, you know, all kinds of comfortable on the carpet is now up and barking and assailing the door because the postman went and put something down in the mailbox. And so it's up and barking. Okay, so this is what happens. Uranus is up and barking, okay, at this time because it's being triggered by two squares. All right, so Uranus is the catalytic planet. It's the unpredictable planet. There's something about your situation perhaps this week, which is unpredictable, or you feel isn't right, or you've been offended, or someone encroached on your territory, or someone is harassing you, or someone's giving you a hard time. You're feeling the chains of oppression, you know, and you're outraged and you're angry, and you probably have good reason to feel that way. Okay, this is what's being set off perhaps for you this week. All right, so this is what we look at. Maybe it's been ongoing or in the background or whatever, but this week it matters. This week it's triggered. This week it's aflame. All right. So we have Uranus over here in Taurus. Okay. And remember, we put the sun in Aquarius over here and we put the moon in Leo over here. Why did we do that? We did that because the sun in Aquarius. Okay. And in the zodiac, you always want to think in the calendar. The sun in Aquarius is going to move to Pisces, it's going to move to Aries, and then it's going to move to Taurus, okay? So the sun, remember that wheel of fortune? the sun is moving towards its peak or conjunction. Okay, the sun is moving towards a conjunction to Uranus in Taurus. So it's on this side of the Uranus in Taurus. It's moving up to that 12 noon point. So that's why we put the sun on this side of the Uranus in Taurus. All right. So why is the moon over here in Leo? Okay, the moon's over here in Leo because Leo follows Taurus. So the moon has left the zodiac sign of Taurus. So it's heading down. It's heading away. All right. So we have the sun, which is approaching the Uranus planet. Okay. So it's becoming more electrified as it approaches. And then we have the moon, which has moved away from the Uranian planet. It's moving away in this regard. It's not approaching. It's moving away. And it's feeling those feelings that you feel when you're on the wheel or the roller coaster where you're starting to go down. So what do we know from this placement? We know that the moon is heading on a downward, you know, cycle here. And so it's, so the emotional, the moon will always describe your emotional life. The emotions right now are like, because it's like, it's roller coasters racing down towards the bottom. Okay. So the moon is feeling very, unstable and very even alarmed. Now, the moon in astrology rules over our emotions, what I feel about myself to be true. The sun rules over identity, what I know about myself to be true. You know, like you can say, this is what I know about myself to be true. I'm like this, this, and that. Okay. And these are kind of like, you know, when you say, I know this about to be myself to be true, it's rather fixed, it's rather set. You recognize it. And you expect other people to recognize this about you too. The moon is what I feel about myself to be true. And if you think of the difference between this is what I know about myself to be true and this is what I feel about myself to be true, there's kind of a ambiguity, ambivalence. I could go this way, I could go that way. My feelings are, okay. And that's because the moon changes its appearance in the sky. It's the only planet in the sky that changes its appearance. Nobody changes its appearance as dramatically and as visibly as the moon does, okay, through its lunar phases. So there's a changeability about emotions. Okay, so a moon in your chart is always going to talk about where you go to when you feel frightened. You know, it's you go to the moon. It's kind of like you go to mom because moon represents mom. You know, you go to the moon. You go to your place of succor and comfort, okay? And so you go to the moon. When you're emotionally alarmed or upset, you go to the moon. Now, remember, we've got 12 versions of the moon in astrology because the moon can be in any one of the 12 signs at the time that you're born. So a comfort place for you might be, you know, like comfort food, yay, you know, or a comfort place for you might be like, I'm going to be logical and impassioned and indifferent, you know, or a comfort place for you might be like, well, let's roll up our sleeves and get this on go. Or a comfort place might be like, you can't do that to me. Okay. You're going to have different places of comfort where you react or express your emotions from and different ways of expressing. Maybe you express your feelings. Maybe you don't express your feelings. Maybe you talk about them. Maybe you physicalize them, you know, in some way, you know, like go and do a good workout or create a beautiful sculpture. Okay, so this is what the moon does. This is where, okay. So when we have a moon in Leo, and a lot of people are used to a moon in Leo. I mean, let's face it, the first word that comes to mind with moon in Leo is dramatic. Okay, so it's dramatic. And people with lunar moons, yes, they get dramatic. But it's not because they're making up or exaggerating their feeling. It's because when you have your moon in Leo, you say to yourself and to others, my feelings matter. What I feel matters, okay? I'm angry, that matters. I'm afraid, that matters. I'm in love, that matters. I hate you, that matters. Okay, so my feelings matter, okay? That's the first thing that the moon in Leo does, because what's Leo? Leo is the zodiac sign of the heart. It's the lion, lion-hearted, okay? So a moon in Leo speaks always or feels from the heart, literally, okay? And it matters to them more than that, because Leo is a public sign. It declares it expects everyone else to recognize what it's feeling and that what it's feeling is very important. In fact, it's the most important thing that's going on in the room at that moment. People who have Moon in Leo, you know, it's going to, it will stop all the action. I can't do this. I'm frustrated. I'm leaving the set. Okay, so it's and everyone's like, oh no, you're frustrated. What can we do to make you feel better? You can recognize that I'm frustrated and I don't like what's going on in this scene. Well, what can we do to make it better or whatever? Let me think about it. Okay, so Moon in Leo is going to declare its emotions with the expectation that everyone recognize it immediately. And if people don't recognize what the Moon in Leo is feeling, the Moon in Leo will become increasingly louder, okay, to make sure that everyone hears it and everyone recognizes what they're feeling and that they immediately do something about it. So this is a very declaring moon, okay, in which the emotions are very, very important. And really the way to understanding a moon in Leo is that if you recognize that the emotion that they're feeling is important, just like Androcles taking the thorn out of the lion's paw, they will immediately begin to dial it back down, all right? So with a moon in Leo, my feelings are very important. So what's going to perhaps be triggered this week for those of you in the audience, maybe this feeling that something went terribly wrong, I feel like I'm being oppressed or I got dissed, or I got, you know, and I'm throwing off the chains of oppression, or someone's encroaching on my territory, or, you know, I've been singled out in some sort of way, and now I am upset, and now I am declaring that I am upset, and I'm going to do something about it, okay? And I'm going to right this wrong, and I'm going to do something about it, and everyone's going to hear about that, okay? So this is part of the T-square that is being triggered this week. Now, remember that the moon is squaring Uranus. So the moon square to Uranus is making it more volatile, okay? But at the same time, because Uranus is going to be in that part of the sky longer than the sun and the moon are, okay, there's something about the moon that has to honor Uranus's position in Taurus. Now, the first thing might be, you know, what am I honoring here? An upset, a disturbance, you know, something being taken away from me, an injustice, I'm supposed to honor this? Okay. And what's being asked here is, when you think of Uranus, you know, which what's up is down, what's down is up, okay, it's the turning upside down or the inside out of a situation. Uranus doesn't just do this to like sort of throw a Molotov cocktail into the workings of your life. Okay, Uranus is doing this to get it right. Okay, there's always a flight plan when you're dealing with Uranus. Okay, it's making the change, it's bringing about the upset in order to get things in proper alignment. And the idea is in order to get it in proper alignment with what's going on upstairs. Okay, so this is what Uranus is trying to do. It's not just being radical and unpredictable, it's doing it in order to get things right. Okay, this is always the notion or the idea behind Uranus. It's the idea of enlightenment. It's the idea of progress. Remember the revolution and progressing. You know, it's the idea of moving and building towards the future. This is what Uranus is trying to do. It's trying to open up minds. It's trying to change, trying to overthrow prejudices. It's trying to introduce equanimity, you know, so that everyone benefits. These are basic enlightenment principles. When you go and study the Age of Enlightenment, this is what they set out to do. Whether they did it or not is something else, but this is what they set out to do during this period of time in European history, okay? It's to, you know, fraternity, equality, all of these sorts of things, these principles that one stands on in life. Okay, so Uranus is basically saying to the moon, well, sometimes you have to break a few eggs in order to get what you want. okay. And the moon is like, I'm not an egg, you know, and Uranus is like, well, sometimes you have to break a few eggs and make an omelet. Okay. Or you have to tear down what was situated there before. And sometimes you just have to recognize that there is a greater good at work than maybe your own personal good. And moon is Leo is like, since when? Or excuse me, but my own personal good meant a lot to me. Okay. Because with Leo, the self comes first, and this is a beautiful and a wonderful thing. All of ourselves should come first, and this is what Leo stands for. Okay, and Uranus is like, well, you're one of me. And Leo's like, no, stop right there. No. I mean, why am I being upset and this person is gaining? That's not all right. Okay, I'm upset. I want this to be recognized, and I'm not going to accept that a few eggs have to be broken in order to make an omelet. In that case, I'll have French toast. So that's where the moon is in this position. And so if you're identifying with the moon part of this conversation, you may be feeling like personally encroached upon and like what you say doesn't matter, and that you're speaking out and you're speaking up, and you expect your voice to be heard and your feelings to be recognized. That's not where the square ends. Okay, we need to remember that opposite the moon, because a full moon is only full when it's opposite the sun. The moon reflects the sun's light, right? Okay, so opposite the moon is the sun in the zodiac sign of Aquarius. Okay, and this is fascinating. This is fascinating because the sun is the ruler of the zodiac sign Leo, where the moon is right now. So what that means is that the moon has to genuflect. It has to obey its ruling planet, the planet that rules the zodiac sign of Leo. And so it has to obey the sun in Aquarius. So what we want to know is, what kind of a champion do we have with the sun in Aquarius? How is the sun in Aquarius going to look out after the needs of the moon? Okay. So the moon is pleading to the sun in Aquarius. It's, I'm upset. And what are you, actually, it's very simple. I'm upset. What are you going to do about it? All right. So the sun, by planetary dignity, dignity is domicile, detriment, exaltation, or fall. All right. So domicile is at home. Detriment is not at home. Exaltation is celebrated, and at fall is, you know, barkeep with pail of water. Get up and leave my bar, you drunkard. Barkeep. Okay, so these are the four dignities. All right, so the sun is in detriment in Aquarius. Okay, so you can sort of think about that as a very simple thing. If a planet is in domicile means at home. It means the planet is in the sign that it rules. The sun rules the zodiac sign of Leo. If you're at home, you can, you know, wear whatever you want around the house. You can play whatever music you want. You can go to the refrigerator and look through it and be like, that looks good. You know, and you can have something and maybe get on the phone and talk and, you know, go about your life. It's your private life. It's your home. You get to do what you want. Okay. When a planet is in the sign of its detriment, which is always the planet, which is always the zodiac sign that's opposite from the one that it normally rules. Okay. Aquarius is opposite Leo. An easy way of remembering that Aquarius is opposite Leo is the heart of summer. Okay. Leo is the sun. So Leo's ruled by the sun. So it's about suntan and wearing lots of things and going out to the beach or going out and doing summer sports or barbecues and things like that, things that are outdoors and fun. Things that we don't do when the sun is in Aquarius in the heart of winter. Okay, in the heart of winter, you're not going to go out, you know, in your two-piece and, you know, ski, okay, or not normally. You know, it's cold, you're bundled up, you don't really want to be exposed to the cold winds and chills and things like this. So the sun is as far away from where it resides as it can be when it's in the zodiac sign of Aquarius. So a planet being in its detriment, you know, remember, you can be at home and go through the fruit, you know, whatever. When a planet is in its detriment, imagine being at a friend's house, or you're visiting a mother-in-law house, or you're visiting somebody else's house and you're there as a guest. Well, you can't really come out in your boxers or your PJs, unless you're besties. You know, you kind of like have to dress for dinner. You can't just go to the refrigerator and rifle through it. And you can't just do your own thing. You're a guest in somebody else's house. And so you need to show respect and pleasantries. And there's a public flavor to what should be a private comfort zone. Okay, so that's a planet and it's a detriment. It's not doing horribly, but it's not comfortable. It doesn't get to do whatever it wants to do when it's in the sign of its detriment. And so when you have the sun in Aquarius, you have a very dispassionate sun. Okay, that's to begin with. The sun in Aquarius is cold and remote. Aquarius is a sign which temperamentally tends to be cold and remote because it's a zodiac sign that's associated to the heart of winter. It's no more than that. You add the element of air to Aquarius. Aquarius is an air sign, and so that increases the functions of the mind. Okay, so being cerebral, intellectual, analytical is very important for an Aquarius. There's a scientific bent. We already talked about that because Uranus is the modern ruler of Aquarius. It co-rules Aquarius with Saturn. So there can be a sort of scientific bent to it. What's important to Aquarius is our people. Air signs are all signs that are associated to relationships. Gemini is sibling relationships, Libra is spousal or partner relationships, and Aquarius is the group. Okay, the needs of the many will always outweigh the needs of the few as far as an Aquarian is concerned. So Aquarius is much more impartial than a Libra will ever be. Aquarius is much more remote than a Gemini will ever be. Gemini still, you know, poke someone in the ribs and get the laugh out of them and things like that. You know, it's like pal around sign. Gemini, not with an Aquarius. Aquarius tends to be more remote. What you could also sometimes see in an Aquarian energy is an increase in nervous energy. Okay, so it can be speedy talk or on edge or a sort of nervous quality. You're either going to get that part of the Aquarian or you're going to get a very stoic, okay, almost impassive Aquarius. Okay, so where the moon in Leo is going to plead its case in very personal terms, you know, and it's going to be personally invested in this, the sun in Aquarius is going to be, so what makes this more important than anyone else's concerns? All right. Leo moon feels like its concerns are the most important concerns in the room. And it will be the sun in Aquarius who will remind the moon in Leo, you're one of many people in this room. You're not the only one. So what makes your concerns more pressing or more important? So Aquarius is always thinking in terms of the big picture or of the group. Okay. If, for instance, the sun as the ruler of Leo is a star, Aquarius is associated to the planet Uranus. Uranus comes from the Greek word Ouranos, which meant fatherly heaven, which meant all the stars in the sky. So Aquarians have great difficulty in being centered in themselves because they can see the entire star map at night. And it's kind of like, you know, which light is more important than the other? You know, this is why Aquarians are always connecting dots. That connect all these different points of light, or they connect the dots that all connect in an argument or discourse that they're doing. Okay, so where the sun is expecting, the moon in Leo is expecting sympathy, it's not really going to happen with the sun in Aquarius. In fact, the sun in Aquarius might be, you know, you're one of many. Basically, when you're dealing with the sun in Aquarius or issues that are taking place when the sun is moving in Aquarius, you're dealing with collective issues. You're dealing with issues that affect everyone. So if you work for a company, you're talking to someone who's representing the company. Or if you're working with community, you're dealing with someone who is the center part of this community. All air signs are about law and order. All air signs are about rules and regulations. Yes, even Aquarius. I know many of you are like, but it's so revolutionary. It's revolutionary in order to get it right. If it's not the rules of a society, it's the rules of eternal truths, okay? And making ourselves, you know, reach up towards the eternal truths, the highest parts of ourselves. With Aquarius, that kind of height is always very, very important, that it be the best, that it be truly good. Okay. So a way of thinking of this, or just to sort of backtrack and hit this point, remember that the sun in Aquarius is also squaring Uranus. So whatever the crisis or the conflict is that's arisen, the other person that you're talking to also has to respond to the Uranian element of conflict and crisis. So what that basically says is that if you're on the Moon in Leo part of it, your feelings matter, because the sun in Aquarius can't just depart or ignore or say, I'm not going to talk to you when you're like this. The sun in Aquarius, because of its square to Uranus, has to participate. It has to answer. It has to recognize what you're going through, even though, because it's opposite the moon, its position is opposite yours. Okay. What makes it also very interesting is that whatever this conflict is, you know, something that's become very emotionally powerful to you if you're on the moon side, or something that is upsetting the equilibrium of your life if you're on the sun side. Okay, you can be on either side of this opposition. You might have been the one with the hurt feelings, and so you're seeking justice, or you might be the one who is being harassed because the person doesn't feel like you're paying attention to them, and they're insisting that you answer. You know, in a true opposition, the sun in Aquarius opposite the moon would just be like, I'm not going to talk to you when you're like this. I'm leaving. Okay. But because Uranus is squaring, the sun in Aquarius has to talk. It has to respond. Moreover, because Uranus is the modern ruler of the zodiac sign Aquarius, and so Uranus is bringing the sun in Aquarius's gaze back to Uranus. It's saying, this is a legitimate crisis. This is a legitimate problem. And you have to pay attention to it. You have to answer it. The best way, you have to pay attention to it, because this crisis isn't going away anytime soon. Uranus is the slower moving planet. Okay, so a good way to sort of think about this, I don't know if you're familiar with old school Star Trek, okay? Like the original cast of Star Trek, you had Captain Kirk, you had Mr. Spock, and you had Dr. McCoy. Well, this opposition between a moon in Leo and a sun in Aquarius is like one of those arguments that you often saw take place between Dr. McCoy and Mr. Spock, okay? Dr. McCoy, and I like bringing him out for an example of a moon in Leo, because the moon talks about our body and our feelings. Dr. McCoy was always administering to the health, to the bodies of the different crew members, okay? He would be announcing, he's dead, Jim. You know, when one of the guys in the red shirt got killed, If you saw someone in a red shirt on a planet beaming down in the first 5 minutes, you knew that person was getting killed because they were like the expendable extras. Okay, so either Bones was like, he's dead, Jim, you know, or like, I have to get him back to the Enterprise. Or if he was like operating, I can only do what I can do. I'm a country doctor, you know, so, and his nickname was Bones. And I love that. So Bones was always like feeling put upon, you know, constantly. And he was always personalizing other people's injuries or what they were going through. And he took things personally, and he was very involved in people's health and declaring whether they were going to recover or not. And very protective, very sheltering. It's very lunar, okay? Very, very Leo moon, very much, you know, Bones, Dr. McCoy in old school Star Trek. Okay. And then you had the opposite. Yeah, the opposite. I mean, one of the archetypes of Aquarius is Mr. Spock, okay? Someone who doesn't look like everyone else. You know, he's got pointy ears and arched eyebrows and this kind of like widow haircut or whatever that's going on, widow's peak. You know, and he's very logical. He's completely removed. He is always giving an analysis and walking through all, you know, pointing out the fallacies in the thinking and pointing out, you know, the consistency in the thinking. If you wanted impartial judgment or an analysis that was unbiased, you went to Mr. Spock. Okay. But you did not go to Mr. Spock if you wanted comfort. You did not go to Mr. Spock if you wanted reassurance, because he was completely remote and completely unmoving. And so you can sort of think of this full moon, you know, as bringing out these two sides or these two parties. You've got one party, which is very nurturing, very protective. Feelings have been hurt. Bad things have been done. These things need to be heard, you know. And then you have the other party, which is like responding with an arched eyebrow and saying, that's, you know, illogical, or, you know, and then running through all the faults in the discussion and the thinking and things like that, and just exasperating McCoy even more, who is like, Vulcan, you know. And it's something to keep in mind, because there is, by nature of the T-square, and it's a fixed T-square, which means it's unmoving. This crisis or this conflict that you're facing isn't going to go away. You have to work out some kind of truce with it. No one's going to win. If it were just a square, someone's going to win. But because it's a T-square, nobody's going to win. And so you have to effect some kind of truce, or maybe come into some sort of collaboration. So what does it say? If you're identifying with the moon and Leo part of this equation, you know, your body's been hurt, your feelings been hurt, you've been offended, someone's encroached on your territory, an injustice has been done, okay? You have to make your case, okay? And your first response may be to make it emotionally, all right? But you have to make your case to a Sun and Aquarius type of energy. And this energy is going to be very suspect of emotions, more than suspect for emotions. It's going to be listening to your reasoning. Let's take suspect of emotions off the table altogether. It's going to be listening to your reasoning, and it's going to be pointing out the faults in your conclusions, you know, and the things that you must do if you want your voice to be heard. Okay, maybe there's a format. Maybe you have to go to HR. Maybe you have to fill out paperwork. Maybe you have to enter into some kind of bureaucratic process. But you can't just get on the phone or assail the person on the other side and get angry at them, okay? Because that person's going to shut down, have nothing to do with you, and either hang up or move you on to something else, or just speak to you, you know, like you're a crazy person, okay? So you can't, you can feel this emotion, and it's good that you feel this emotion. That's why, you know, you're feeling put upon, but you have to make your case. I'm not saying you have to be Mr. Spock and do some sort of like seamless logic, pristine with pristine points, but you have to make your case to the best of your ability. You have to be clear thinking, okay? You have to be able to articulate what the problem is. You have to explore ways or means of solving or resolving it. And then you also have to take into account what the protocol is, what the procedure is, what the rules and laws and what the etiquette are. These are all virtues of an air sign, okay? You follow these things and you're going to be able to reach your objective. Let's say you're feeling the Sun in Aquarius, you know, I can't listen to this one person. If I listen to this one person, then this person gets something, that person, you know, if I give into agitation, if you know, the squeaky wheel always gets the grease. You know, I'm just encouraging someone to act out or to be selfish or something like that. I have to do what's good for the overall group. I have to, the needs of the many must outweigh the needs of the few. Well, if that's your position, you know, and it's one in which you're being removed and you're not liking being challenged in the way that things are done, this conflict is going to make you rethink it, okay? And according to how we read the planets, the planetary makeup of this particular week would say this is a time to rethink it. You know, this is a time to rethink it, no matter how outlandish the other party is being, how immature, how irresponsible. You still have an obligation, either through family or social obligation, or professional obligation, you still have an obligation to hear that person out, because you're both facing a problem. You're both facing a challenge. You're both facing a difficulty, okay? If it were a true opposition, i.e. not a T-square, you could walk away. It's a T-square. You cannot walk away. You have to answer this person, because if you don't answer the person, the crisis, the challenge, the difficulty that has brought you together will only get worse, okay? So you're not going to come to a resolution that's going to make you happy any more than it's going to make the other person happy, but you have the opportunity to figure out something that works. You know, it's, I kind of want to use compromise, or compromise would be the word that one would usually throw on it, but I see it more like a truce or a ceasefire. because you're involved in trying to figure out what's going to serve both sides. So if you're the one who feels oppressed, you have to have sympathy for the other side, for the person who's in charge. If you don't show that sympathy or respect, you're not going to be heard. And then if you're the person in charge, you have to have sympathy to what's being brought up. You can't say, oh, they're being irrational or crazy or acting out. You don't have that luxury. You have to answer it. You have to answer it, and you have to answer it effectively, because by answering it effectively, it's going to help you and the other person. Now, is this going to like sort of exist as a festering wound or battlefield or something that's not going to be resolved? No, there's actually quite nice news. And that nice news resides in the fact that Venus will be sextiling Uranus on February 7th. Why is this important? Venus is the ruler of Taurus. Uranus is in the zodiac sign of Taurus, which means that Uranus has to answer Venus. Okay, remember how the moon in Leo had to answer the sun, which was in Aquarius? Uranus in Taurus doesn't get to just sort of be freewheel, you know, whatever. It has to answer Venus. And Venus is in a zodiac sign of Pisces, which sextiles that Uranus. So Venus is going to find a way. It's going to introduce an energy around February 7th or the lead up to February 7th. It's going to introduce an energy in which there's a willingness to listen, a feeling of like, listen, I don't want to be on this side of the argument any more than you want to be on that side of the argument. So I feel for you being in this oppositional position, but I have these things that are really important. You have those things that are really important. Right now we're opposed. Let's find a way that we can broker some type of agreement or some type of negotiation. I'm not saying it's all going to be resolved on February 7th, but certainly on February 7th, when Venus, and she's exalted in Pisces, when Venus forms that sextile to Uranus, you're certainly going to see a ray of light or a way out of a tight corner.
If you've studied astrology, you're probably familiar with aspects like trines, squares, and oppositions. But did you know that there are a lot more aspects you can read in an astrological chart? In Astrology Foundations Level 3 with Master Astrologer Rick Levine, you'll learn the magic of quintiles, septiles, and other harmonic aspects. And understanding these aspects will take your understanding of astrology way beyond the ordinary, or even what you thought was possible. Rick Levine is one of the foremost thinkers on harmonic aspects, and he's going to share his mind-blowing perspective with you in Astrology Foundations Level 3. By the end of this four-week course, plus two bonus weeks of live sessions with Rick, you'll get a complete overview of harmonic aspects that will change the way you look at astrology forever. Learn more and enroll today at astrologyhub.com/foundations3. Again, that's astrologyhub.com/foundations3.